Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm Baritone KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm Hunter.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast. Hot in these headphones, that's for sure.
What is happening, y'all? Guess what? It is 2022.
It is.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I know.
Dadgummit, dude. I remember,
yesterday.
Back in the single digits, you know? And then here it is, 2022. Golly, yeah, it's wild. We are headed home from some state.
We sound tired.
Oklahoma, yeah. We do sound tired and a little sick. We don't know what's going on, but, man, we are probably sicker this year than we were last year. We got pretty sick last year during hunting season.
Pretty sure I've had COVID twice this year already.
Yep. I have got something, probably what you have. Eric has got it. Hunter seems to be well.
Yep.
At least in the sense of that.
I've got some hypothesis as to why he wouldn't get it.
I got some, too.
The Dr. Peppers.
I think it's the government employee stuff,
Dr.
you know.
Dr. Pepper a day.
Mandates and all. But,
sorry.
Yeah, we are headed back from Oklahoma. A little heavier than we left.
Ooh. Ooh, in many ways.
That's right. That's right. It's been a good time.
We almost ate pizza twice yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. We did. It was fun. I got to put on my sun shades.
Do you mind
blasting.
If I put some air on?
No, that's fine.
All right.
It's a little toasty
up in here. Oh, I got my own?
You got your own temperature adjustment.
It's not blowing. There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Look at these wheat fields, man.
I know, dude. Green. It's wheat.
It is.
I mean, it's good wheat.
Yeah.
Recently, we did a podcast that was kind of a late season Q&A. And then oh, my goodness.
What is going on?
Your phone's going
off.
Where
is my phone?
I don't know. It's connected to that thing. I tried to turn it down.
Wow. Sorry. Wife missed me.
That's right.
Just barely.
Did a late season Q&A podcast recently. And then we actually went and did a little late season hunting. Hunter and I were... the hunters, I guess you could call us HKTK, or HKTH, rather. Call me TK for sure. That's kind of how I feel most of the time.
Mine is sharp this morning.
That's right. I'm fuzzy, guys, because we had to outrun a blizzard and got up at 4 a.m. to head home, and I've been driving through wintry mix for about 3.5 hours, and the last little bit of time here has not been quite as bad. We're almost home. So, anyways, we had Tyler and Eric up there to help us do some filming. Eric's in the other car, so you won't hear much from him. If he was here on the podcast, you wouldn't hear much from him anyway. He's kind of a quiet guy, but what he has to say is good. We just thought we'd probably talk a little bit about what we got going on.
Yeah.
First off, though... you've got a video that's fixing to come out that's going to be pretty sweet.
I do, yeah. It's coming out on my personal channel, The Element. It's a Colorado buck, and I don't mean the guy with the black beard and the blonde hair. It's a buck that I shot in Colorado on public land, and I'm pretty excited about it. Actually, there's been some excitement around this Colorado series. It's interesting to me that you don't hear a whole lot about, and maybe that's why people are excited, but you don't hear a whole lot about whitetail hunting in Colorado. And maybe people have been interested or are interested and want to see more about that, I guess. But there's been a lot of eager comments, I would say, in the YouTube videos that have thus released. And there are two of those. And we had some pretty good action. So if you haven't watched those, go brush up on that before this video releases. I'm not sure when this podcast is releasing. KC is going to be working on it and figuring that out.
Probably the first week of the year, but video might release before the podcast. Yeah. Either way, you need to be on the channel.
Yep.
Yeah.
You need to be subscribed and notified. Let me tell you this. If you haven't hit the bell for notifications, then you will not see when we post new videos. And I've got people that have texted me recently and said, man, I'm subscribed to y'all's channel and I hadn't seen nothing new from y'all in months. And it's wild, but if you go through and look at all the channels you subscribe to, like, there's channels that release videos every day, every week, whatever, that you hadn't seen nothing from in forever, and they're at the bottom of your subscriptions list.
Yeah.
YouTube does that for some reason, and they'll try to put you on some whack track watching boxing or something like that, when really what you want to be watching is hunting, and then next thing you know, all you get is suggested boxing videos. Come on, YouTube.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Anyway, that video is coming out soon, so you need to go check it out. And then we might possibly have just made more videos.
I'm sure some videography took place because I was a part of it.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a little bit of stuff coming out from Oklahoma, some public land stuff. This has been a unique year for us because you and I killed deer in Kansas the first week of November. Well,
fairly,
like the first trip up there at least. So sorry y'all, I'm just gonna cough some through this podcast. I'm not gonna edit all of them out, so it's just gonna be the way it is.
Yep.
But we had like some freedom to kind of explore and do different stuff elsewhere in the world, right? You went and bought a tag in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Six of them. Yep.
Hot diggity dogs. Yeah. I bought six tags.
I don't know what I was thinking. I should have bought 5 day.
I should have done. Yeah. Well. So we've been doing hunting all around. You hunted South Texas too. Like, mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. And then Hunter, actually, I think you started off the Oklahoma train this year, didn't you?
I did in, well, it was the same time y'all were up in Kansas.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because
you killed your East Texas buck on the 3rd, I believe.
It's up 3rd or 4th.
I think it was 3rd.
That's right, because I killed like a day or two after y'all left, and then I went back, I didn't go back, but I went to Oklahoma while y'all were still in Kansas.
Yeah, that's right.
Just lining them up.
You want to talk about this? Is something Casey and I talked about before, but like, this is tough when you're in one state trying to kill a deer, but you also care about helping your buddy.
Oh man,
dude, it is tough to really be a good help. You know what
yes.
I mean? Because you're like just trying to survive. These trips are not always easy. We are mm-hmm. camping in parking lots and you know, at dead end boat ramps and whatever else, just trying to survive out of the back of our truck. We talked about this on the way home. Well, maybe we talked about it last night, you and I did, KC, but just being able to spread your gear out is such a big help.
Yeah,
man.
It doesn't happen very often, man, especially when you live in a motel life or any of that kind of stuff. I spilled a whole pot of spaghetti on my tailgate whenever Eric and I were in Oklahoma. And had to eat it because what else are you going to do with it? So I picked it all up and I ate it. And so Hunter went up there and had a really good hunt, kind of really peak rut. You saw quite a few deer, learned some stuff.
Some big bucks,
and
man.
Then I went up directly like 5 days later, mm-hmm. kind of not really what you call post rut, because it's a little bit different whenever you're in the South. There's still plenty of rut activity, you know, from the 15th on, really the whole month of November. And even while we were there this time, we still mm-hmm. saw some stuff. But I didn't have I didn't see the same kind of stuff Hunter did. I had to work around, work, find some new properties, and find the new pattern altogether.
Yeah, because he sent you a couple of properties that are like fire for him early on.
And I went and didn't see any deer.
Yeah. It's wild how things can change that quick.
I know it. And we're still trying to build a trust relationship between me and Hunter, so not quite sure what that all entailed. But either way, I showed him some of my spots this time. So I guess we're even, because I seen somewhere he didn't see, see anything.
Yeah. Hunter, did you... Do you think you could have killed on that first trip, no doubt in your mind, with a camera guy?
Oh, yeah. I could have killed at least twice.
Yeah.
No doubt. It was just down to the wire of me trying to juggle my bow and the camera and the GoPro with a deer coming in, you know.
Yeah.
At 25 yards.
The self-filming game's tough. Especially on the ground.
Especially on the ground.
Yeah, oh yeah, for
That's
sure.
where all my stuff mostly was the first trip was on the ground.
Yeah. Well, when Hunter first showed interest in doing this kind of thing, I was like, man, are you sure? Because you're going to have some things that you really would like to go your way, not go your way, and there's going to be some deer that should be dead that aren't. So I guess... The point is, hint, hint, we might need a cameraman for next year.
That's right. I mean, Eric, the plan is to have him here, but we're thinking about another intern position and stuff. If you are smart, free scheduled, and willing to just eat wheat bread, send us a message. But I went back up there by myself and had a tough hunt. Related a lot back to Moon. I think we talked about that on the podcast. I think the Moon had a lot to do with it, which is weird because I've never been a Moon guy.
Mm.
But definitely didn't see midday movement, that's for sure. It was one of those deals where it's weird, where the mornings were good and the evenings were terrible.
It's kind of hot?
Yeah, not hot, but not good weather.
Was that in Arkansas or Colorado?
Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that hot.
We kind of ran into that, though, this trip.
Yeah.
Mornings were real good, and evenings just petered out.
Till the fifth evening.
Give me that.
Bro. Yeah. one of the things that seemed to be a motif of, like, hunting in Oklahoma was that you could learn information from the first go-around, but the next time you're up there, it's some of it applies, but most of it you have to relearn.
It's kind
of
cool that we kind of had this opportunity. We talked about in Kansas some where we were there so long, we had opportunity to like see the rut change a little bit, and I think we kind of had or you guys at least had an opportunity to see the season change and like the different habits of deer throughout those different points of the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's one thing. Like, in Kansas, I feel like sometimes there are definitely changes, but, like, it's so open and so difficult that, like, it almost is hard to see patterns change. You know what I mean? Like, the deer are just going to relate to certain things that they relate to or not or whatever. You know, it could be wide open just walking across pasture in September or in December. And I think that's one thing that maybe makes it a little... Like, for me, going to Illinois, I would feel maybe better about particular windows deer doing a particular thing, such as last year when I shot that deer at a scrape in late October on a cold front, and then the next week go sit in a funnel and have tons of bucks go by you in the middle of the day, you know what I mean? We don't see that as much in Kansas, at least, I feel like. And in Oklahoma, you know, we're pretty good ways away. Things are different. The habitat's a lot different, a lot more cover, and I think you can kind of see where throughout the season different habits that you would like habitual or you would like traditionally hear about on you know, deer hunting podcasts or in deer hunting literature or whatever.
And in this deal, there's some givens that are always going to be, or constants or whatever you want to call them, that are always going to happen, and then there's variables between different areas, right? And this deal with Oklahoma is that in the late season, they're going to be going for food because they're kind of cold. They're pretty hungry. They just got over the rut. And it's going to be that way about near everywhere you go. But the difference in, like, a Kansas and Oklahoma is that, like, In Oklahoma, sometimes they can just bed within 200 yards of the food.
Yeah.
And do that on private land, and you just, sorry, no chance. Mm-hmm. You know, Hunter ran into that, I think, and right where we went up there the first evening, and got there in time to hunt or scout or whatever you want to call it. And what did you see?
Eric and I got set up on a really nice glassing point over some wheat, and had some does come in, filtered through, eating some sumac berries. And a they had a real nice 8-point with them too, but they just staged up 10 yards, you know, on the other side of private, or on private, and stayed there until evening, just waiting. It's kind of like a transition or a staging area before they go to feed in the dark. And I don't know if that's just the time of year it is, or if that property's had pressure to teach those deer to do that, you know, at this time of year. Or whatnot. Yeah. So it was just very uneventful. And then Eric and I tried to hunt that deer some more and just had the same outcome.
He was big.
Well, I think you just needed some weather.
Yeah, something to get them on their feet earlier.
And just that didn't really happen until when we left. And truth be told, I'm fine not hunting in that stuff. So
you want to turn around?
Not too much. Not too much at all. But, I mean, it's still the constant is there where they're going to go to food. And you just got to figure out how to get between them and the food. And sometimes that distance was real short. And it's kind of hard to make happen.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me that, like, even a mature buck would potentially in the late season will, bed fairly close to food.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's something – I feel like that it, and this also the variable that plays into this is, like, in Oklahoma, there's a short rifle season, and we're a pretty good ways from that rifle season right now. Uh-huh. You know, like a few weeks from that season, so these deer have had a lot of time to calm back down. And I think if you see that play out in other states, possibly where there's a short rifle season, you're a month or so past that season. I mean, after rifle, the pressure in most states when you get to December just starts to dwindle from a hunting pressure standpoint. So not that those deer won't kind of stay in the same habits that they were when we were pressured, but if their food source changes because things are dying more and they only have X ag field that can really feed them, or, you know, some of the things we're going to talk about that we saw are natural food sources here on this podcast, like, then they could possibly, you know, change their habits and be, you know, pretty lazy about it, because there's nothing keeping them. There's nobody walking around in the woods anymore, really, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's really, you know. And I think also we saw some duck hunters, and y'all seen that up there. I think that deer can tell the difference in let me give a caveat, but I think deer can tell the difference in a duck hunter and a deer hunter. And one big difference is a duck hunter shoots a loud gun a bunch of times and talks and stuff like that, and a deer hunter ends up being a guy that the deer smells at 40 yards and goes, what in the world is sitting right here beside me? Like, this is freaking me out. You know what I mean? So there's a difference, because the duck hunter lets the deer know that he's there a lot of times before a deer hunter will. You know, we get a little more close to the deer sometimes than they would like before they know that we're there. So I think that's the difference in the pressure. And so
you see that a lot in urban hunting, you know. The deer are familiar with people just walking by, but as soon as you get in a tree 10 yards in the woods, they get spooky.
They know the difference in, you know, 30 yards or whatever, the smell, you know.
I think there's a difference in rifle hunting pressure and bow hunting pressure.
Yeah.
Because with rifle hunting, you're backed off. Most of the time, you're backed off of a food source a decent ways. But when you're bow hunting, man, you're in the draw. You're spooking these deer from 20 yards away or 80 yards if they're winding you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot harder bump than it is if you're rifle hunting.
I think you're right. I think that's why I think after rifle, even the bow hunters kind of stop hunting as much. And
Everybody likes to rut.
Oh, heck yeah, dude. I mean, it's tough to get out there in the cold late season and sit where with a bow in an open air stand, you know. And I think that's why you see, like, from kind of once bow starts ramping up in like mid late October, all the way to December, pretty much, you see this pressured, the way that pressured deer behave. You know, of course, the rut changes things a little bit, like the heat of the rut, mm-hmm. but you see them, like, feel that pressure. And then after that, you know, after rifle, like once rifle hits, bow hunters, a lot of them are like, oh, I'm so tired of this, all these pumpkin patch, you know, whatever they say, you know, and then that like knocks a lot of bow hunters out. And then Thanksgiving, Christmas, all these things start to happen and dudes will just get out of the woods mm-hmm. pretty much for the rest of the year.
But we don't care about our family, so we go hunting anyway, so it's not a not a problem for us. That's just a joke. But one of the things that is another deal, like with the difference in the pressures, is that the pressure from rifle hunting is literally taking animals off the landscape.
Yes.
That's a big issue. Like, you have rifle season where they run in there and shoot, you know, four of the five mature bucks that are using this property, even if there's that many, you know, it's kind of a, that's a pretty good number. But whereas bow hunting, it's like that interaction type pressure, like you were talking about, or, you know, like, and that's something you have to watch out for. But, well,
and when somebody takes a deer, they don't typically go tiptoeing around after dark, putting the deer in the back of the truck. They just do whatever they got to do, and they slam doors, and they talk, yeehaw! And yeehaw and everything. Yeah. So I think that, like, there's that, too, when dudes are out there shooting deer, which mm-hmm. rifles are pretty effective at killing deer.
They are, man. But somebody sent us a message on that live feed the other day asking, you know, they're a new hunter, like, what, you know, what's something you could do? You know, what's some advice? And I don't think we said that, but
move to Texas.
Yeah.
We've got 8 weeks of rifle.
Perfect. Yeah, except no public land, especially none that you can use a rifle on. So,
yeah.
But that would be another bit of advice. Like, if you want to kill some deer, you know, pick up a gun and do it because, mm-hmm. man, it's pretty. We talked about that this week some. Like, if you can see them, for the most part, you can pull it off.
If you practice your shooting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. I mean, shooting quail
mm-hmm.
a bunch of them go shooting them, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the same thing. Like, it's fun to shoot deer. I mean, we can get all bow hunting challenge. I love to challenge myself and all this stuff.
Challenge.
You know? But I think that, and I do, but, you know, I think that I'm not a professional quail hunter.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a professional deer hunter, but I deer hunt a lot, mm-hmm. a lot more than I hunt quail. And so, you know, I decided that I would challenge myself that way. Just like when I decided I really want to be mad at the world and start fly fishing.
Yep, it's a good way to just be mad.
Small creeks, especially.
And, so one of the things I want to talk about on this podcast some is like, podcasts are cliche. I don't know if y'all realize that, so I'm just going to say cliche things instead of trying to be cool because I'm fuzzy today. But putting pieces together, which was a big part of success on this trip.
Yeah.
It was pretty hard to put all the pieces together. And every time I've been up there, you had to restart pretty much because of different variables. Here a while back, it was cows. This go around, it was, you know, the lack of rut and the lack of good temperatures, lack of deer even, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter, you were just there twice, right? You didn't go on any middle trip like I did.
No.
And sure, so for you is even probably more night and day on like different
crazy
views.
Crazy difference.
How?
If I don't know how to word it, but I wish it looked like last time.
Yeah.
Because this trip was rough.
Yeah.
It was a struggle bus. The first trip I went on, though, man, I went last year two times too, and those were rough trips just due to weather. And then this year, it blew my expectations out of the water.
Only due to weather last time?
Well, there were some technical difficulties.
Weather and water bottles.
Weather and water bottles. Yeah. That was a big factor. The hunting I really found some good stuff this year and was really impressed at how well it went, except for the self-filming part. That was real rough, especially watching like the biggest, you know, the biggest buck I've ever had in bow range hop the fence and head on about his business.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to watch him. I got some more footage of him. You know, I ran into him later in the evening. We crossed paths again accidentally at about 60 yards, 70 yards. I got some more footage of him then. So, but this trip has been a big learning curve. I think that if I had to do it again, I would push either closer to food or further away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That medium range where you think, man, I can catch them right here half a mile away. I think those bucks are almost in two different stages right now. Like, you've got some bucks that are way post rut, they're not even thinking about it. But then I saw some bucks engaging with those and fighting. And so I guess it gets very, very ecologically, you know, a small system.
Mm.
It depends from even draw to draw.
Yeah.
It can vary across the property what you see in the behavior of those deer.
The way the girls go, so goes the way of the boys, is what I think.
That's what you were saying when I was touring. It was like, man, we can write dude songs that are rock and roll, or we could write girl songs, and all the girls bring all the guys.
Yeah. To buy them stuff.
So we sell twice as many tickets that way.
Yeah.
But,
and that's a thing you see up there. I mean, I don't know. You have a particular style that's a little bit different than the way Tyler and I hunt. You're a big observation guy. Would you? Yeah, he is for sure. Because the more you observe, the bigger you get.
especially after all them cocoa roos.
Do you feel like that was the way to, like, you know, retrospectively, would you still hunt that way this week?
I would. I wouldn't have hunted the spots I hunted, but had I not done what I did, had I just gone and picked a tree and jumped in it without an evening or a morning of glassing something, I would have been even more disappointed and likely gone the whole trip without ever seeing a deer. So I just think I need to work on my map stuff and pick some better spots, maybe quit taking advice from, you know, Casey, other guys.
Hey, we saw deer there.
Yeah. So that's kind of my take on it is I observed and I saw deer. I just did not see, and there was a lot of spots I saw deer, but it wasn't either enough deer or the quality of deer to get in there and to hang. And had I hung, there was a few places where I would not have seen what I did get to observe.
That was something we were running into quite a bit, especially early on. It's like, how many deer am I hunting right here?
Exactly. That's what I wanted to know when I was looking at, you know, if I'm looking at 800 or 1,000 acres or whatever the size is, if I'm looking at 80, you know, I want to know what I'm in there after.
Yeah. And
I thought maybe just a morning session or an evening session would give me an idea of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It can sometimes. And I tell you what else can do that for you is trail cameras. We actually deployed some trail cameras this week, some Moultrie cell cams, and it made a pretty big impact on the way we were hunting and places that we hunted. These actually are some new cameras that we can't really tell you too much about, but they work real good. I'll just say that. They take some pretty pictures. I had one send me a picture of a doe while ago in the snowstorm, and she was crisp and clear. I bet she was real crispy out there.
Crispy.
But that actually played a huge part into kind of Tyler and I putting pieces together. We went out the first evening and didn't see Jack Diddley at a place that I had hunted with Eric previously and had some good encounters. And decided, well, pulling a plug on that one. And, you know, then it's kind of back to square one again. You know, everything I'd learned the trip before didn't mean nothing. And, well, not everything. But we bounced to some different spots and looked at some different things, hung some trail cameras around. Tyler and I decided to go hunt on the ground one spot one morning and kind of hunt and scout. We're going to observe. Maybe try to cut a deer off. It's headed back to bed. We're kind of up in some hilly stuff. And then we're going to scout around. I'm going to show him some of the country and, see if we can maybe learn something about how to make a move on a deer. We, long story short, hike around a whole bunch, find some cool stuff. But really, it's a lot of rut sign, you know, and you want to try to interpret that stuff right. It's a... It's really not the best thing to do to be like, oh, man, look at all these rubs. It's December 26th. Let's hunt over these things. You know, it's just not something that's going to pay off a ton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta read through that and decide, okay, that means there were some bucks here. Are they still here, and what are they doing now? And on the way out, we found a bunch of tracks around a cattle water trough and said, man, it's pretty dry up here. It hadn't rained in a long time. Are these things coming down and watering in this thing, like, pretty often? So we decided to hang a camera on that thing. Sure enough, we're seeing deer. And after that, it was just about having the right wind to hunt it. So That's kind of a weird thing, too, is where, like, you figure something out, but then the wind doesn't cooperate for 3 days, and you're trying to weigh out this whole concept of should I push in and be real aggressive and hunt a just off wind, or should I wait on something that sets up good for both me and the deer,
yeah,
but it may or may not ever come.
Well, there's also the thought that, like, you know, a camera can help you out tremendously like this, but also you're not getting the whole picture. You know, we've talked about it before.
Uh-huh.
So where is that deer actually coming from, especially in this case where you've got, like, very specific places that the deer can walk in front of the camera.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So we're having to figure out, like, we're trying to figure out where the deer coming into this general area from. Are they coming and hooking into this little spot for, you know, and so that's one thing where you're like, man, could I make this little wind right here work that doesn't seem good because actually they're coming from this side, you know, whatever. So that's things that we were trying to work through for a couple of days until we knew for sure we had a good wind. But we didn't end up doing anything major aggressive. We were pretty conservative.
We were pretty conservative and didn't end up going in there and hunting until later in the trip on that particular pattern. But you found a pretty neat pattern while we were up there, Hunter.
Which pattern was that?
Well,
many,
did you find more than one?
He says many.
Tell me, the oaks that were dropping?
Oh, there was.
Yeah.
The elusive oak.
Yeah.
The elusive acorn dropping oak of
dropping New that Year's. Yellow gold.
Yellow ones. I'm still not convinced. Just let it be known. Still not convinced.
Ah, well, you just have to.
There's correlation. I just want to see a rumen.
So Hunter came back one night and said,
Eric and I had glassed some deer, multiple groups on multiple different groves of trees that from afar looked like some oaks holding a few leaves.
Y'all must have been real far.
It looked like post oaks.
It was very far. I've got phone scope footage of that spot and scope zoomed up to 50 power. Mm-hmm. The phone's on 3. So, like, I've got some distance out there. Looks like a few leaves on the trees still hanging on, but it's actually not. It was some soapberry trees, and that was all of the seeds or the berries.
How did you figure out there were soapberries?
You.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember. I thought you might have looked it up or something.
No, I think
KC or me?
KC.
Mm-mm.
It was Tyler?
Yeah.
But I don't remember. Me and Eric.
They had to ask the OGs, is what he's trying to say.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Hey, what are these grapes?
Yep. But the deer were actually, I think
Eric got out of the gas at the gas pump and said, "What are these?" And I said, "They're soapberries." He goes, "That's what they are." Yep. And then
Casey ate one.
Yeah.
Don't do that, guys. It's bad. I didn't eat that. I didn't actually ingest it. I just put it in my mouth.
What and it tastes
straight
like?
Up dial soap and it foams.
How about
it's wild.
That? They named it aptly.
It is weird, dude. Yeah. And apparently it's pretty poisonous. So that might be why
even
I'm sick.
But those trees were easily targeted by the deer that we watched, because we watched several groups of deer, like I said, do that. And that was the first thing when they got up out of bed, was went to those trees and fed for 30-plus minutes. So in future, if I'm back up there again this time of year, I know where some of those trees are, especially the big groves. It seemed like they concentrated on those more than an individual tree on a draw, and I think that's just, you know, those berries are so small, there's a lot more there.
Here's my hypothesis.
Yeah, let's talk about this, Casey. What do you assume they're doing under soapberry trees?
I will believe, because we also texted a biologist buddy, and he said, yes, they will eat them and even prefer them in certain situations. So if that is the case, it's because there's a drought and there's hardly anything else around. However, my hypothesis is that underneath those trees, soapberries have very dense canopies whenever they are foliated, okay? So when they have leaves, they have very dense leaf thickets up in the top of the
not
tree.
Not exfoliated, but
not
foliated.
Exfoliated, yeah. Yeah. So zero sunlight gets to the ground. But then in the fall, they drop all their leaves. The ground becomes very fertile underneath the soapberries because of all the
nutrients.
The nutrients that come from the leaves. And then...
And the soapberries.
Sunlight can get to bare dirt, and green grass comes up beneath the soapberry trees where everywhere else doesn't have that green grass, or at least copious amounts of it. So
can I make my
yes
observation here in this whole situation? I saw soapberry groves that had green grass under them.
Uh-huh.
And I saw soapberry groves that did not have green grass uh-huh. under them. And I saw deer feed under both circumstances. Uh-huh. So, what does that mean?
I'm with you. I don't know. That's why I'm saying. That's why I say.
Thanks.
I'm not discrediting it yet.
Right. But here's what it means.
It's unbelievable.
But to me, it means either way, we're targeting soapberries.
The trees.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Groves of soapberries.
Yeah. So it's a correlation versus causation thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, in deer hunting,
there's a lot of
you
them.
You don't really need causation. You just need correlation. Yeah. You need to know where the deer is.
There's
right?
a lot of instances, I think, where correlation is not necessarily the correlation you think it is.
Yeah. Guess what, guys? The moon is not pulling on deer like it's a tide, okay? It's not actually the moon making the deer move, right? It's just because he's got more light at night, right? So he can see at night.
Dang, you're going to start a fire with Hunter.
I will, dude. No, I think Hunter's kind of... I mean, you don't think the moon actually is making the deer move, right?
Like the pull of it?
Yeah.
The gravitational...
It's not a feeling the deer has because of the moon. It's just because of light.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That's okay. Exactly why I hunt the moon how I hunt it.
Yeah. No, that's not the only reason.
Well, I was just
it gives you a real good reason to sleep in.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. But which, don't get me wrong, I mean, maybe sometimes you could get away with that. I mean, Hunter has. He's killed some deer. So
killed a Texas Polecat buck last year like that.
That's right.
11 p.m.
11 a.m.
Man, alive.
You're about to get so much trouble.
11 a.m.
Can we please just have that sound clip? 11 p.m.
Yep.
11 p.m.
You get that moon up and you get that thermal works real good. Dadgummit, that's funny. So that was a pattern that, first of all, was completely unbelievable to me because soapberries are just disgusting, and I always assume nothing can palate them. Not, I mean, you don't even see coon
curds. They got a big
old
seed, too.
They got a big old pit in there. Yeah, it's like a hard thing. And but, I mean, Hunter and Eric have no reason to deceive us, so, like, why would I not believe them, yeah. right? Super intelligent fellows and everything. So, yeah. like, there's got to be something there.
Yeah.
So, either way, we decide, hey, and you know what? Eric and I, on the trip before, had seen that green grass underneath some of those groves of trees, and we're saying, man, I wonder if they come over and feed on
yeah,
this stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that you're like, in a lot of landscapes, you wouldn't think twice about it because yeah. it's everywhere or whatever, mm-hmm. but in a drought situation, like you said earlier,
yeah.
which they have going on, it's, you know, it's something
yeah.
for sure.
Dude, you know? Every little bit of sustenance counts.
That's right.
Yeah,
I don't Especially think you would ever target that on a wet year.
Yeah,
probably
maybe
not.
I don't know.
Maybe the grass, but not the berries specifically.
Yeah.
yeah, sure. Yeah.
And who knows? It might be one of those things where the year gets harder and harder as things push on, and maybe you couldn't target it on a wet year on December 15th, but on the 28th or 29th,
mm-hmm.
maybe right. it starts happening.
Right.
I don't know.
Reserve.
Yeah. But so we start putting some of these pieces together of, and you and I drove around, and we saw does underneath those things, public and private, in
uh-huh.
quite a few places.
A bunch. Yep.
You know, late in the morning.
They'd be close to the road, too.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like a thing that they are doing despite discomfort.
Yeah.
Like, those does don't want to be 80 yards from the road. But
right.
if that's where the food is and they have to eat it, they're going to do it. And, Hunter, you said you saw a deer. Oh, no. Did we? I don't remember. Somebody saw a deer leave a wheat field and go eat underneath a soapberry tree.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric and I tried to cut some does off the last morning. We were
they looking, definitely were doze off them for sure.
We were in between doze and off. We were trying to cut some does off. We watched them leave a wheat field, which I'm, you know, when you see a deer leave a wheat field, you think, well, okay, he's, but you know, he, she, him, hers,
never know these days.
Been in there. I didn't ask.
Whatever it wants. Yeah. Yep.
Whatever it wants. Had been in there feeding for
antlered or antlerless. That's how we have to refer to
yeah. Yeah. a significant amount of time.
But
they
is it
just,
really an antler? Yeah. Is it isn't even.
Sorry, Hunter.
Like, these does didn't go over there and feed for 5 minutes and leave. You know, they spent some time.
Yeah.
And then we watched them funnel out of a wheat field. And I told Eric, I said, we can cut those does off because we watched another group do the same exact thing. I said, we can cut them off and let's boogie because we got to do it quick. And so we left there and cut these does off, and they were hitting a
coming over the top of a ridge and going down into a specific point of a draw. So we got to where we could see that draw, and that's when I put the two and two together that those does were funneling to those soapberry trees and feeding under them.
Yeah.
And then from there, we set up to make a go at them.
You know, I've seen this thing happen before where a food source becomes a social hub, and then even after the food source dries up, the deer still end up there, and they want to hang out there for a little bit. See it in Kansas sometimes, and I don't know if that's what's happening there or not, but it's just kind of a point to talk about a little bit there where sometimes – if you're like, man, why are these deer hanging out right here? I don't have a clue. It's because there was a factor 2 weeks ago that's not a factor anymore, but it still made a situation where there's a bunch of scent, maybe some scrapes or something there that makes the deer want to be there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
See that around in East Texas, around persimmons and stuff like that too, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. Corn piles.
Corn piles for sure. Hunter, did you have a problem with arachnids?
With a what?
Arachnids.
Arachnids?
Yeah. I heard there's a few scorpions out there.
I did not have any problems with them.
No scorpions at all?
No.
Oh.
Man, I was thinking of the actual scorpion. But
how were you?
I was too, but I figured it out about 5 seconds before he did.
The performance of a scorpion, yes, I did do that. I've perfected that. I'm hoping that one day when I'm too old to do this and work with the element that I'll go into the circus and just perform scorpions all day.
You, in fact, for peanuts, like, you're a bucket biologist because you took scorpions from South Dakota and brought them to Oklahoma.
I'm pretty sure. I did.
Sure enough. That gonna, rainbow trout going to end up in the eastern U.S.
Hunter, why do you have such a hard time with falling? I mean, you don't. It's not that you're not agile. Like, you do fine. But
oh,
like,
no, I can bob and weave. It's just the shortness of the legs.
Yeah. You're not short, but you're not a tall guy.
No.
Are you like 5'8"?
Yeah, I'm like 5'7", but 80% torso.
Yeah. So. I'm the same kind of guy.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
The legs move fast, just not tall.
That's right. You got a Nebraska walk
makes
all
sense.
The time.
Somehow he can walk faster than any of us. I don't understand it.
Got a mission in mind. So.
That's it.
But I
feel like you got a point to prove more than anything.
No.
No?
I think that's
how you walk normally?
That's just me dragging y'all.
Speaking of correlation, his scorpions only happen whenever he's got that fast walk thing going on. It's like they ain't quite made to do that, but he's still forcing it.
I don't know which scorpion would be the funniest one for me to view, but the one that I did view in South Dakota was the funniest thing I saw the whole trip, dude.
If you don't know what a scorpion is, it is when, this is kind of a model after Rob Dyrdek. He explains this pretty well, but it's when you fall and your toes or your heels click the back of your head.
Or platform if you're using a saddle platform.
The cruiser platform is getting clapped.
Not good.
I did it in South Dakota. I did it on the first trip I went to Oklahoma by myself, but no one was there to laugh at me so I could lay there and cry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know it then. I broke some GoPro mounts. Those are still somewhere in the abyss.
We are hard on gear.
We are.
So I picked up my feelings.
I'm ready to show Paul my bow and just be like, look at this. This is what happens after 9 months. Yeah.
All right.
This is why we need
less
a new
than
one.
That. 4 months. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We got
beat on stuff.
It was
they're broken.
The season.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I told Eric, I said, we got to make a move on them does. Let's go. He gets a little clip of me leaving and shuts the camera off, and at that moment I hang a stick with my foot and fall.
That takes talent too.
I knew I was going down so hard and so fast, I just threw my bow because it was safer away from me than it was in my possession.
Bows are safer away from you. You stepped on mine the other night.
I just did a gentle toss and feet hit my platform. No, it didn't even hit the platform. I didn't have my platform. We were observing.
Yeah. Hit the spot
and scope. It hit the spot and scope. And my binoculars came up and busted my front lip, man. All up. I was spitting blood as we were running down this drainage towards some does.
Nothing makes me more mad hardly than getting slapped in the face by a stick in the woods, man.
It hurts.
I would say electrocution is probably above that.
Yeah. I hadn't been electrocuted too many times in the woods.
I have a lot. And let me tell you something. It doesn't matter if it's the first or the 1,000,000th time that you get touched by a 110 or a hot wire fence or something. Instant rage.
Yep.
instant rage.
Yep. But something, it summons up some kind
it
of
does, dude.
Male deal.
It ain't just like, it ain't just an owl. Yeah. It's a, I am mad.
I mean, that's the same way I feel when I get the face slap.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not just something that hurts. It's like, man, you came after my face. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's what boxers girls do. You know? Yeah. They hit you in the face, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Oh. Cheeks are frozen.
So let's talk about this. We made these assumptions around these soap berries and stuff like that, and kind of want to get to your story here, KC, because it's really cool, and there's a lot of cool aspects to it. I was really glad I got to be a part of it, and I came along, decided to come along. So let's talk about, like, why you ended up where you ended up and kind of get to that point in the story.
Really, the huge part of it was because of, a fortuitous drive-by. When Eric and I were there, made me say, this looks a lot better than it does on the map.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that you can see a motif of. And you have to, it's not that there's anything wrong with the map. It's that you have to start being able to read it a little bit better. Where you're like, man, that's kind of flat. And then you drive by, you're like, man, there's a few hills over there. You know, or like, man, look at those little trees. And then you drive by and you're like, golly, dude, look at all this grass and habitat and all this. You know, and that's kind of what Eric and I did on this place.
Well, one thing you can't tell is has the cattle been on it recently or not? A lot of times,
it makes a huge difference. Yeah, and I ended up talking to this rancher of this place, and he said, "Yeah, we take the cattle off, you know, in August." And I was like, "Well, that's pretty good."
Yeah,
you know, because not only do cattle graze down hard, but that's another type of pressure that deer don't really like.
Yeah,
you know, a cow on a property, not a big deal. 100 cows on 40 acres, a big deal.
Yeah, there's a potential that blue stem is still growing at that time of year too. Yeah,
exactly. So. It's a fall blooming plant, so that would totally make sense. But anyways, fast forward to you and I scouting it out, hanging the camera on that water trough. Fast forward to getting some pictures to show the deer are using it in the daylight.
Yeah, that was exciting.
The camera framing was pretty good.
It was.
I don't think you could get much better with the conditions that we had. You could have had a better angle, but there was some stuff in the way, right? But for everything we had, we determined which side of the water trough the deer were coming to more often, and then we determined what the deer were doing on the way in there and where they were coming from somewhat, and the camera helped us do that, and we found a place to hang the camera. And then not only did we get pictures of bucks in the daylight, but we saw deer underneath the soapberry trees.
Yeah, which we assumed. We had the assumption that they would
there were
be.
There were tracks and stuff.
Because we knew
there
was green grass under that stuff. Mm-hmm. So we assumed that.
That helped confirm it.
Yeah.
And then after that, was waiting on the right wind. And, you know, on Thursday evening, one wind shift.
That's it.
And we ended up on public land. That's right. So went in and they're kind of smaller trees, but we'd been by them and looked at them some and knew that we could hang a saddle in a tree. But we go in there kind of thinking that Tyler and I are going to hang in the same tree, and we're kind of debating because it seems like the deer are coming in to this water from two different trails.
It's best to hang in the same tree as a camera guy and hunter, you know, so that you can communicate.
And this is stuff, you know, most people don't have to worry about.
Right.
Because most people are just hunting. We're filming and hunting. So, for one guy, it's really just not even a debate, except for the shots. And we ended up setting up in separate trees because it would have been difficult for us both to manage in a small tree and have the shots that we need and get it all on footage. So, I think it was your idea to hang in two different trees. I hang in the most knowledgeably aggressive tree.
That's it.
Knowledgeably aggressive because the wind was almost infallible for this tree. Had a south wind, and the deer were going to be coming around the south side of this thing. So
just barely.
Just barely. That's right. So no worries there. And but I was as close as I could possibly get. There were some other trees that I could have got in between trails, but I was as close as I could possibly get, especially this one good trail. It's raining, by the way, guys. We're truck casting, so if you hear that, sorry. I have a trail at 12 that's really good, and I have a trail at 44 that's also really good. 44 is a poke. I can shoot at daylight. I mean, I can shoot lights out at the house at 44.
And it wasn't too windy.
It wasn't very windy, but 44 on a whitetail is pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
I almost would rather shoot one at 60 than 44. Because if it's kind of still and quiet, he's going to hear that bow go off, and it might be kind of weird. Or hear the arrow coming, which is a whole other debate. But either way, we're pretty much hoping for the closer shot.
Mm-hmm.
But a deer was going to have to come in and jump a fence and give me that shot, as opposed to do something different and just go straight to the water. So, but we had the green grass on our side, and a deer that wanted to eat the green grass was going to come to the close trail. We ended up hanging with me right there, and you were like, what, 10 yards behind me?
Yeah, almost 10 yards probably.
Mm-hmm. And we worked on our hand signals and visual confirmation.
Yep.
Worked on our lip reading.
We worked hard on that.
Still, yep, need a little work in that department. I have tiny lips.
I'm the worst lip reader in the world.
I was trying to say a four-syllable word, I think, and that's just a little bit much.
Yeah,
if I had any advice for lip readers or people who aspire to be lip readers, it's to use like one and two-syllable words.
Yeah, in one word.
Yeah, yeah, like go.
Now,
or big buck. We got that one real good.
We did
exactly what that was.
Because it was a big buck.
That's right. So, Tyler helped me out a ton because I needed to hang in a tree by myself. So that means we are going to split sticks up. And we probably could have done it a little differently, but I was real wary of leaving a stick in the place that it was on the tree. Because a deer was going to walk like within 10 yards of this stick.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we were using those Timber Ninjas, which are real cool and real expensive, but they are awesome. You mm-hmm. know, thankfully, we've been gifted some of those to use. All it took was one stick with an aider. And I got up in my tree. My platform was like 9 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, Tyler, if you don't mind, can you take that stick off and just leave the bare tree down there? And then, you know, later come back and, you know, put the stick back on.
Yep.
My belly was feeling real good, so I didn't have any too much concerns. However, that is the major danger in taking your stick off of your tree or, you know, injury or whatever of, you know, emergency deployment. But anyways, I'm up in a tree. Tyler goes and gets up in his tree. And we actually sat there. And this is a thing that you and I do. You and I hunt together really well. We've been doing it together for quite a long time. So we kind of, A, think a lot alike. But B can just sit there and just shoot holes and things until we find the exact best option. I coined a phrase last night. I said, you can shoot holes in the boat all you want, but you got to row sometimes.
I love it,
so,
dude.
So might put that on a t-shirt. Who knows? Yeah. But we stood around longer than I really wanted to, talking about what to do and splitting up and where to hang and all this and that. We almost sat on the ground even. Which I'm glad we didn't, because it would have been toast. We would have been not anything cool happening. But we both get in our trees. We're hanging in our cruiser saddles comfortably, which is real nice. We've been talking a lot about how, dadgummit, man, I want to shoot more deer from a tree, not less. And I've shot two deer this year, two bucks this year from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. Yeah, whatever. Wow factor. But it is hard. Ground hunting is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter can tell you. Hunter, you hung in a tree how many times on this trip?
Not once.
Not once? You never put your platform to a tree?
I couldn't, no.
Oh,
there
man.
Was, the last evening, Eric and I had every intention of hanging in a tree, but there was not a tree or two trees close enough to split like y'all did.
Yeah.
To where we could even get in a tree. Everything was tiny. Uh-huh. Just tiny and bare with no backdrop. So as soon as a deer would have gotten down there, we would have been just picked off. I could have never drawn.
We did have a good backdrop. That's what we had going for us.
It was beautiful.
Well, the trees that we were in were crooked and weird. So, like, your whole saddle setup is perfect because you're leaning out just like those, like the same angle those trees are all leaning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So I had great shots. Tyler had great ability to get footage. And we actually are stationary probably, I don't know, about 4:30, maybe 4:40. Which is pretty late in the day, and we hadn't been there 10 minutes probably, and I said, gave Tyler a click. I like, instead of whistling, I go like that. I don't know. It's just kind of the way I get people's attention in the woods, but I gave him a click and told him that I saw some does, you know, quite a ways away, kind of staged up, and they kind of disappeared, and we went back to just kind of swinging around, you know, and waiting on deer to come in, and then I look over, and here comes a tiny deer down this fence row, and I'm thinking it's I look just look at Tyler, and I can already see he knows he's there. I didn't have to click him that time. I thought it was a little yearling fawn, but you said it was a buck, and I put my binos on it. And sure enough, it was like a little forky, almost spike kind of guy. And, you know, it's like second to last day of the hunt. I kind of got an itchy trigger finger, but I'm thinking, man, I've killed two deer this year, two bucks. Like, I don't really have to kill this buck. And then I'm like, dadgummit, man, I like to shoot stuff, you know? So I'm like weighing all this stuff out in my head, thinking, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to shoot this deer. And then start thinking, I was like, man, I don't need to shoot this deer, you know? Like, I just can let him get older and grow and, you know, that whole thing. And then I looked back at Tyler after I thought about it for a while, and I said, you know what? Because I was planning on shooting a doe if I had a good doe, if I had the opportunity. I looked back at Tyler, and I said, if it's perfect, I'll take the shot. I kind of mouthed perfect shot. I think you got the idea.
Yeah, of what I got that one.
Yeah, yep. Which meant he's standing out there at 54 right now. I ain't poking out that far.
No.
At no little buck. So he just locks it up out there at 50 yards underneath one of these soapberry trees, just eating grass, pulling dirt clods up, you know, flinging root balls. He is getting after it on this green grass. And all the while, I'm like, uh-huh, yeah, soapberries. Sure, they're eating soapberries, right? And this little buck is definitely on the grass pattern, at least. And he's, you know, doing little buck stuff, looking around and this and that. And all of a sudden, he whips his head up pretty hard and looks one direction. And I'm like, there's a deer over there somewhere. And I start looking around. I can't see nothing. I can't see a deer at all. And finally, this is another kind of cool thing about saddles is you can just – you don't need to move around a lot, right? You don't get seen if you do that. But you can adjust your body in different ways than you can in a stand because you're leaning against that thing. And I was able to lean out, and behind one of the trees that I have right in front of me, I see a rack. Pretty good rack. And, yeah, I look back at Tyler, and he's got his binos, and his eyes look like he's got Scotch tape just pulling them open. And I say big buck, and he said, "Oh yeah, you'd seen it before
yeah,
me, right?"
Yeah, I was able to see it before you were. I could tell because it was past KC, so I was watching him still trying to look around find this buck, and I see him. When I first see him, he's kind of looking down, like, you know, a buck walking with his head down. He's coming in. He's probably like 100 yards or so, maybe a little bit more. And then, like after like two steps, he just pulls up, and it's like, I'm like, oh, big buck, like, yeah, high rack, man. I was thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening right now. You know? Yeah,
and shortly after that, we got to watch him work a scrape, which was cool, you know, and just
got some footage of that,
kind of like that ruddy-ish type thing, and you know, you can do with that what you wish. I kind of think it's the whole bell curve of rut activity. They're still kind of messing with scrapes and licking on branches because they still got a little testosterone. He's not, you know, really making a new scrape or anything, but they can't hardly pass up a licking branch, and that's what he was doing. That deer came in from the direction that I thought I was going to have to take the long shot on him.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, he walked right past that trail and came over and jumped the fence to go eat green grass. And you made a good point that you thought the little buck might have helped us in that situation.
Yeah, I think in the whole situation, I think it was a live decoy, as they say, and not that the deer was going to come in there because of him. The deer was coming no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it made him a lot less wary. He would have been a lot more alert and just, you know, on pins and needles, being that it was pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
confidence,
it was still early
decoy.
Yeah, it was just confidence
it's
decoy.
Like putting up that blue heron when you duck hunt.
That's right.
It's kind of funny, but it does. I mean, in that situation, at least for that little deer, it did seem to work, and he kept him distracted some too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like there were situations where, like, he would be looking at that other little deer, and I could get away with touching my rangefinder and doing stuff, which I almost messed it up because I was like, "This okay." I'll say that here in a second. That buck jumps the fence, comes in to eat the green grass, and then they're just like out there for forever. Just milling around, eating green grass. They're kind of like doing these little figure eight, daisy chain kind of things a little bit, where they're like, the little buck's walking around the big buck. He actually went over to him as soon as he saw him and like almost like subordinated to him. Did you know, like as soon as he saw the big buck coming in there, he kind of like went over and like acknowledged him.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird. But then the big buck starts working towards us, which is always a good thing. And he's behind like a bunch of cover for me, which is good in the sense that like I can get away with getting my bow and doing all this stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, it's quiet. The deer's getting closer. I know my range to my trail, but what if he like gets weird and runs out of here and looks back or something? I need to range a couple other things. I go to grab my rangefinder, and I'm being like super still and quiet, right? So I kind of just like barely grab this thing, you know, kind of soft. And I go to pull it up, and then the cord kind of grabs and pulls the rangefinder out of my hand. And it goes on my chest. And I was like, oh, no, it's over. And then they didn't even hear it. I couldn't believe it. But
I heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, you heard it from your tree, didn't you?
Yep.
That's wild. And then so I got away with that and then ranged a couple other spots. Well, I guess old Buck decided he was getting a little thirsty. And he just starts kind of moseying over to us. But it took him forever. And I think, again, the little buck helped us because he was behind him, almost kind of pushing him, not like a aggressive thing, but the big buck kind of had the competition kind of thing going, like, okay, I'm going to go to the water first before that little buck gets it. And the big buck comes in at like 18 yards and stops behind one of the trunks of the trees. I kind of get my bow up and ready to draw. And this is a thing that I have learned because of experience. Releases squeak, no matter if they're good, bad, or ugly. Not the metal, you don't need that squeaking, but like just that stuff on your wrist or whatever, it can make a little noise, right? And I've shoot a Cobra. I love that hook release style that I have with that Cobra. It's effective. I can find my D-loop without even looking at it, and that's what I did. But what I did is I put that hook of that Cobra through the D-loop and then put quite a bit of tension. Like, I was probably pulling, like, 8 or 10 pounds against my bow right then. That way I could get that squeak or whatever you want to call it, the noise it would make against my wrist out of there, because I knew I was going to shoot this deer real close. And at this moment, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get a shot at this deer. you know, like, it turned on at that point in time.
Yeah.
And he keeps on coming down that trail. He's about to go to the water. He comes out and clears, and I'm thinking, okay, I can either try to, like, stop him here with my draw, or I can wait and shoot him quartering away, but a little bit further away. And I'd almost decided to do that. But then he said at 15 yards, he whips his head back and looks behind him because he had heard something back there, probably other deer. I don't know. I wasn't looking anywhere else except right there at him. And I knew that was my moment to draw because his attention was on something else. And if, you know, the worst case scenario, of course, he could blow out because deer are weird. But I believed the worst thing that was going to happen was that he would be like, wait, what was that? And turn and look. And that's exactly what he did. But he was quite a bit less alert than what I thought he was in the moment. But when I draw, and he turns his head from backwards to looking my direction, but he's not actually looking up. He's looking down kind of at the base of my tree or beyond it, because he doesn't really know what happened, right? He just kind of knows something moved over there. So goes the way of the element bros. It was about 0.3 seconds from draw to arrow release. And I'm by no means endorsing this practice, but it's the way it happens sometimes. Whenever you feel good about it and things are settled, ain't no reason to hold it no longer. You let that sucker fly, and that's exactly what I did. I had a quartering two, and in the, like, you know, the amount of time I had to make a decision, I went from drawing my bow, shooting him in the chest, in the front, you know, taking a frontal release, like, in 0.3 seconds. I mean, it's so, so fast. It is, I couldn't believe how fast it actually happened, and it worked perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Smoked him in the chest. Blood immediately goes to flying. Red dirt is going everywhere. He tears out of there and then runs about 50 yards. Captive audience, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. This deer runs about 50 yards and goes to try to jump the fence at full speed and doesn't have it. Doesn't have it in him to get over the fence because he's lost most of his blood, right? And his shoulder's a little messed up from a shot and all this. Hits the fence wires and accordions like a cartoon. It's we have it in slow mo, which we probably won't release. We won't release. I'll go ahead and say, it's gruesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the deer, I mean, without a doubt, was dead on his feet anyways, but we looked at it a bunch, and we think that he probably died just as much from a broken neck as he died from, you know, the air impact, which is absolutely crazy. And, yeah, he hit the fence, bounced back about 15 feet, and just laid over dead. And it was over in, like I shot him, and within 3 seconds, the deer was dead on the ground. That's never happened for me, I don't think, at least where I could see it, you know. That's happened. Happened in South Dakota, but I didn't see the deer. But this time, it was like a shot of turkey with a shotgun, you know. It's done. And after that, the first thing Tyler and I both did was cough our heads off. We're trying to laugh and be happy, but we were just coughing so much.
My mouth, I haven't done this very often in my life, but my mouth was literally gaping open.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was just doing the whole, just, you know, lower jaw, hit the ground kind of look after he hit that fence.
Oh, it was crazy, nuts, man. Dude. Just because it was all so compact, and, like, man, it is pretty cool to shoot a heavy, durable arrow, just didn't know that you can just shoot a deer wherever you need to hit the vitals, and that's exactly what I did. You know, like,
and you got a pass through.
Yeah, you it poked through the other side. I shot a big old broad. Here's the deal, guys. We actually got a little something in mind for y'all, for some of you guys who still like to shoot expandables. Keep that just in your back pocket. But I was shooting an expandable with this, and I've shot them both, right? And I will continue to shoot them both. I shot that whitetail special, and it is pretty cool to shoot an arrow. Like, we were shooting those vector. I shot a vector hammer into this deer, and no matter where you hit this deer, expandable, fixed blade, doesn't matter. You're going to get the penetration you need to kill that deer. Mm-hmm. That's the reason expandables get a bad rap. It's not because they're bad. It's because people aren't using them properly. You put 596 grains into a deer, expandable, doesn't matter what it is. You're going to get through there, and I mean, I overkilled him, you know, like it absolutely
just demolished him. Dude, it was a destroying shot.
Yeah, and so he ran out there, hit the fence, and
basically went like in the crease between shoulder and neck meat.
Yeah,
right?
So it's like if you were to take, you know how you aim at the armpit on the back side of the shoulder? I kind of aimed at the cowlick on the front side of the shoulder, and I hit him a little higher because I was aiming with my 20, and I just, you know, I just did on the pin shot. And it didn't matter, you know. I hit him right there, just demolished, in front of the whole shoulder.
And it came out like...
like probably four or five ribs back. Yeah, something like that. Not, so
it was like, if you'd have hit him just broadside where you exited, it would have been a double lung, too.
I think I cut every artery in his neck. I demolished one lung and cut a little bit of the heart. So he didn't have much of a shot after that.
There's something, too, cutting those arteries in the neck.
There is, man. It is pretty effective. I've seen, like, honestly, people talk about hitting them in the heart, but hitting them up in the like where the aorta and what is the other vein, like the aorta is the artery, right? Like anyways, at the top of the heart, that's what's actually super duper effective, and that's really more arteries than it is heart, right? Because you're cutting all the blood supply. If you go in, you just slice one ventricle, he's going to die, but he's going to run a little ways, you know. But, like, yeah, man, arteries, whew, toast, and he absolutely was. Damn. And then that's how it went. We got down, ends up this sucker is an old, old buck. You know, I didn't pay much mind to him too much. I knew he was a shooter as soon as I saw him, so now I try not to hype myself up too much. I had to calm down for sure because I was getting pretty, pretty antsy when he was standing around out there at 55. But then when he got to about 25, I calmed down, was ready to make a shot. And sure enough, he was a probably 6.5-year-old plus deer. Felt of his tooth wear and just looking at his face and his body and his antlers. He's got huge pedicles, but kind of not small antlers, but relative to the pedicles, they're not, you know, as big. He's just a solid 8-point with a high rack, gray face, scars all over his face, and his most unique feature is probably one of his ears is just demolished from years and years of fighting, almost like cauliflower ear on a, you know, a UFC fighter. It's wild. And the other one had a lot of scars on it too. So yeah. I mean, although my grandparents might not think so, a trophy for me. It just 8-point. A lot of them around here. We had some fun calls on the phone earlier. But Absolute, like, you know, one of my most memorable deer, dude, probably forever. I mean, it was so cool. Tyler and I talked about it. I love all these guys that we get to do stuff with, man. It's awesome, and it was great getting to share camp and do stuff, you know, eat, laugh, have fun. Hunter covered my eyes while I was driving yesterday. It was hilarious. but it was really cool because the last time you and I were in a tree together and a buck went down, it was in 2017 on Nameless when I filmed that. That's a long time, dude.
We got a new Nameless.
That's right. He ain't got no name. I don't know. He pretty much was floppy from the get-go. I mean, that was one of the first things you could see. But it was pretty cool to just the OGs, you know. Yep. We had said before we went up there, it's like, look, dude, these other guys are good. Get me and you together, we can put our heads together and find a way to kill a deer. Because it takes two of us compared to Hunter. He can just do it on his own. But anyway, sorry about that huge cough. That's bad.
So, that's good. I get the quick thumb.
Sorry.
Hey, take off, Tyler.
He's like, oh, man, where to go?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me just cover up this loogie sound here.
Tyler's a little squeamish when it comes to gross things, so he's been having a hard time with me and my hacking and my yakking. Yep. But we actually just made it home to old East Texas, and I actually have a daylighter on my property and one day left of season, at least one huntable day left of season. So
they're just going to go mess it up for you.
Yeah, probably. He's going to go out there and just play in the sand.
He's going to get some of these spicy peppers.
Guys, be sure, and if you haven't, subscribe on YouTube. We really appreciate that. Of course, the podcast, you're listening, you're probably subscribed. If not, do that. Support the people that support us, because that's what helps us do this thing, and I promise you, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Thanks for chasing my chickens.
Big thanks to our partners this year, for 2021. Big thanks to Vector, Onyx, Cruiser, Cobra, Moultrie. We appreciate those companies. They've done a lot for us. They have given us the ability to go do these hunts, to make these memories, which is very important to us, and to have some experiences that are just truly, you know, once in a lifetime every once in a while, you know.
Dadgummit, man. Once in a lifetime is a weird term because it feels that way, but we've been blessed enough to, like, have more than one once in a lifetime thing. It's pretty cool. But, guys, I hope 2022 is awesome so far. It's going to be probably the best year the Element has ever seen. I'm going to call it now.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it, babe. All right, so, guys, make sure you're making the most of your opportunities. Get out there, hunt hard if you still have a season. If you don't, it's okay. Relax, spend some time with your family, but make sure that you're always getting ready to rock and roll, because before we know it, they're going to have velvet heads, and then they're going to be an open season to go hunt them. So remember that, and remember, this is your Element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes for the Grill, Smoker, Camp Stove, and Camp Fire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.